It's Jane Latour on December 7th, 2004, interviewing Brenda Berkman in Brooklyn at her home. So Brenda, it's been 8.5 years since I've interviewed you. You were recently promoted last time, the last interview, which was August 7th, 1996, to lieutenant. So a lot's happened since then. I would particularly like you to speak about going into your position of command and what that was like as a lieutenant.
Well, that was a long time ago.
Yeah. Anything that springs to mind. We could dwell more on the captain status, but, you know,
well,
as a neophyte lieutenant.
Not that much difference
lieutenant.
Between the two, actually.
Yeah.
But
that was new for you.
I was really glad to become an officer for a bunch of different reasons. One was the boredom factor, you know, that after you've been doing firefighter work for X number of years, you know, it's time to move into like a different role, I think. And for me, it was time to do that. And also, I mean, it's as hard for women firefighters to adjust to the role of being in charge as it is for the men, because at least the first generation of women firefighters in New York were never part of the gang. You know, they weren't accepted in the kitchen to begin with, so it wasn't that hard to take themselves out of the kitchen and you know, be in charge and not be one of the guys. And that's a very hard thing for a lot of male firefighters. And I don't think it was nearly as hard for women. Certainly wasn't that hard for me, because I really appreciate as an officer that I set the schedule. You know, I'm not relying on committee votes so much. I mean, I ask the guys what they want to do, but I go upstairs in my office and I do what I have to do in terms of my responsibilities. I ensure that the guys are doing what they're supposed to be doing in terms of their daily routine. And, you know, I run the drills. I'm in charge of the building inspection, and I like that.
Mm-hmm.
I like that part of being an officer.
So how was the response to you when you came in as a lieutenant?
Well, I think I told you that one of the first things that happened to me when I went to the battalion was that the battalion chief came to visit me in the company I was in for the tour.
Mm-hmm. Which was, what was the number?
I don't know if it was 1 or 24. Mm-hmm. It was like my first tour in the battalion. Mm-hmm. He came in and said that he didn't want me in the battalion. And I said, well, that's too bad, because I really wanted to be in this battalion. And I thought to myself, this guy just gave me a get-out-of-jail-free ticket. I mean, now how could he possibly say that he was evaluating me
fairly,
if he started out with that kind of an attitude? So I just sort of spread that story around a little bit. And before I knew it, you know, people were treating, at least at the battalion level, were treating me like, you know, normally, or relatively normally. And that was pretty much the end of that. And it was a battalion that not very many officers liked working in. It worked out good for me. I enjoyed the area that we worked in a lot, which was Midtown Manhattan. There was a lot of variety of emergencies and types of buildings, mm-hmm. and a lot to learn. And I had a pretty, when I did take a regular company, which was Ladder 12, there was a number of different spots open, and I liked that place. And one of the reasons I liked it was because for New York City Fire Department, at least, it had a fair amount of diversity among its firefighters. I mean, I was the only woman, but they had several Hispanics in the house and several African Americans, and turns out a couple of gay men, and you know, I mean, so it was not as monolithic as a lot of places that you could work. So it meant that, you know, I really feel like some of the white men felt a little bit more restrained in some of their comments and behavior because of the a large number of some kind of minority that was there at any one time.
You joined a new union when you got that position.
Mm-hmm.
And how was that?
Much better.
Was Peter Gorman the head of it then?
I honestly don't remember.
Yeah. But
if he wasn't the president then, he became so shortly. He's been president for quite a long time now.
Mm-hmm.
And he was just reelected president. And, I mean, the first thing about the union was that at the meetings, there wasn't nearly as much screaming and cursing and open bad-mouthing of women firefighters that went on as the few meetings that I had attended with the UFA. And, you know, the first couple of union meetings that I went to, I was really, really nervous. And sometimes there were comments made from time to time about the women that weren't particularly flattering. But, and you know, it's still the case that when I go to a union meeting, there's some guys that just won't sit next to me, you know, which is hysterical to me. But in terms of the union board, you know, I mean, I would say I have a pretty good relationship with them that I've developed in the last couple of years in particular, where, you know, I can stop by the union office and people have me, you know, invite me in and offer me coffee and, you know, sit down and talk to me at length. And, you know, not just Gorman, but some of the other guys as well. And Pete has been very supportive of certain kinds of things, like when I made a motion to that our union should donate, make a donation to the strike fund for the London Fire Brigade. Pete got that through the board, and then when we were at a general meeting, another officer stood up and proposed that they double the amount that the board had allocated. And Pete gave me full credit, along with this other guy, mm-hmm. for, you know, pushing the donation. He never hesitates to, you know, say something flattering about me if he feels that, you know, I did something for the union or mm-hmm. in the interests of the department mm-hmm. that the union approves of. So,
Quite a switch.
He makes a point of saying brothers and sister at the union meeting, because usually I'm the only woman there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there are two other women officers now, but they don't attend very often. And, you know, if you had a video camera, it would show that I'm actually wearing a union sweatshirt. You know, they haven't gotten to the point where they order a lot of small sizes, but they do give me stuff, you know, when I go and ask for it, so...
Mm-hmm. So let's segue. Yes, big switch. Let's segue to when you were promoted to captain.
The UFA, on the other hand, has gotten worse.
Oh, really? Because that's the question that I thought of.
In my opinion, they've gotten a lot worse.
Let's talk about that now. Let's talk about how they've gotten worse.
Well, the guy who was elected as president of the UFA, Steve Cassidy, made his name on his opposition to a statue that was supposed to be put at headquarters after 9/11 that revised, as he called it, the three guys putting up the flag at the Trade Center, which was a famous picture that was all white men, and the statue wasn't going to have any women in it, but it did have a figure of three male firefighters, one who looked sort of African American, one who looked sort of Hispanic, and a white male, and Cassidy's thing was, oh, that's not historically accurate, you know, and therefore, and this is like racist because, you know, they're trying to show people who weren't there and everything else. And it was really racist what he was arguing. And despite, you know, it was a huge embarrassment for the department because it was a donation. And the intent was really pretty innocent. You know, the women firefighters weren't all that thrilled because there wasn't anything recognizing that there were actually women down there. But in any event, that's how he got to be well known, and then he ran for union president.
And did they put that up, that statue?
No, the statue never got put up. Yeah, I don't know what the hell happened to it, but it's gone.
Yeah.
And every time I see Cassidy, he is, you know, he won't talk to me. You know, he won't look at me. It's really pretty absurd. He's never, as far as I know, he's never met with the Women Firefighters Organization. I'm not president of it anymore, but he's never met with them.
This is interesting because Patrick Lynch from the police union ran on a platform after 9/11 to change it away from brotherhood, you know.
Yeah, right.
Patrolman, or Patrolman's Benevolent Association. It was going to be brothers and sisters after...
it was going to be the patrol officers
of something,
or something.
Something not, you know, generic
that,
rather than...
Right, and that...
He didn't push through with it.
No.
I mean, but...
That was defeated...
By the board.
Sort of narrowly, but...
Mm-hmm. But still, it's quite a difference.
Yeah, and Cassidy is always pushing for a harder physical abilities exam, even though he knows that it would have an adverse impact on women. And the union has opposed one of the sort of major affirmative action initiatives that the department has actually undertaken, namely the promotional exam for EMS to firefighter, which is supposed to bring in more women and minorities, and has actually had that effect. And Cassidy and his board have always opposed that. But he also, you know, he's done a lot of anti-union stuff, really stuff that has made him very hated by the international and a lot of other locals around the country because he endorsed
because
George
of the election,
Bush,
right, and campaigned for him.
And campaigned for him and against, even though Bush has been awful with respect to the firefighters union, the international was an early supporter of Kerry. The officers' union endorsed Kerry, you know, and it was really and Cassidy went out of his way to, you know, F you, all the locals that had come here after 9/11 and helped and raised money for New York and done all kinds of things, and he just blew them off like their opinions didn't count for anything. So I don't think of him as a good union man to begin with, and he's certainly misogynist, even though he claims to have mended fences with the African-American men. So
let's talk a bit about being promoted to captain, and you say it's not that much of a difference between lieutenant, but were there anything, what changed or what?
Well, the first thing that changed was I came back to Brooklyn from Manhattan.
Mm-hmm.
And I worked for about 9 months for the safety chief, who had been one of my battalion chiefs in the 7th Battalion, who I had a lot of respect for. And we had a great working relationship. He was a great boss and mentor. And I enjoyed doing the work, but I really didn't enjoy being down at headquarters. I really liked working for him, but I didn't like all the other stuff that was going on. And also, I need to get back to the field. I mean, there's not that many women in the field to begin with, and so, you know, every time one of us leaves, however good the reason is, you know, it's like, oh, they're hiding, they don't want to really be firefighters.
Right.
You
exactly.
have 30 years in the field, and you spend a year
out of
the field.
I heard that from a battalion captain in Brooklyn about you.
About me?
About the women firefighters.
Oh, yeah, we're all hiding.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Can't do the job.
Yeah, well.
Go on light duty. I wrote down the whole list litany after I spoke to him.
And why were you talking to him?
He's somebody, a son of somebody that I know. Mm-hmm. And he was very concerned.
And how many years does he have on the job?
I'm not sure. I didn't ask him, but he's a battalion captain.
He's a battalion chief.
Battalion chief, sorry.
Yeah.
But he was exceedingly concerned that I not share that with anybody. He's remaining anonymous, but...
Well, there's a bunch of guys, you know, and this attitude, they can be 6 months out of probie school, have never worked with a woman, never seen a woman at a job, and have very strong opinions about women. Because, you know, the department does very little to counter that. There's so few women on the job, and there's nobody to kick their ass.
Mm-hmm. You know? How many women now in the department?
We're still around the 25 mark. I mean, it's around 27 or something like that. But for every woman that they hire, and they've been hiring about one a class, so there's been about, you know, 50% of the fire department has come on since, the firefighters have come on since 9/11. 50%, 3 years ago. And of that number, only... And so that's about, I don't want to say about 9,000,
mm-hmm.
half of 9,000. So let's say they've hired 3,500 or 4,000, something like that. Mm-hmm. Of that number, I think 11 are women. And for every woman who comes on, there's a woman who retires. I mean, we just had another woman retire not too long ago. You know, so we had a woman who's graduating from probie school in a couple of weeks. We have another woman who's just being sworn in to the next probie class. We'll probably have two more women after that. But we did a tremendous amount of volunteer intensive training in 2004, starting with. Is it 2004 or 2003? I think it was this year. I have to look at my date book. Where we spent 8 weeks with these women at the New York Sports Club doing a very intensive cardiovascular and muscle endurance activities within the health club. 2 times a week.
Mm-hmm.
Then we did 8 weeks of practicing the exam out at the fire academy. And almost all of this was staffed by volunteer women firefighters. Mm-hmm. And so that's, you know, that's a tremendous commitment. Out of that, we got maybe 25 women that scored a perfect 100.
Wow.
And then there was another group, which, got the next lower score. They missed one event by, you know, 1 second, yeah. to however many things they missed it by. And they, some of them got hired through the EMS promotional list. So, you know, maybe we'll get 20 or 25 women off that list, which will run for like 3 or 4 years. So that is an enormous amount of effort for relatively small return. But if we hadn't done that, there wasn't a single woman who scored 100 on that exam who hadn't been part of our training program. And by that I mean who had attended like more than 3 sessions. Anna did the statistics and it had something to do with, she didn't feel that people who had attended only a couple times really got the benefit of the program. Mm-hmm. So that's pretty telling. It means that, you know, you need this kind of intensive effort to have any real chance of success.
Mm-hmm.
But for us, you know, it's heartbreaking to see even one woman fall out of that group.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if we had 100 women in that group of likely hires, it wouldn't be nearly as unhappy for us if, you know, half of the 100 said, oh, you know, I'm not really interested in the job, or, you know, I've decided not to keep up my level of fitness or whatever.
Now that commitment, I know that somebody sent me an article from the City Club about the initiative with the sports club.
Right.
But and they mentioned Legal Momentum. And they were involved with that, but United Women Firefighters also?
We provided, the sports club provided some of the staff, mm-hmm. and they provided Nick McNichol to direct the program, and Nick had previously directed the program before, which was run at John Jay College. And now then he moved over to the sports club and he did this program, and they had some, you know, they have some trainers there, but they couldn't have run that program without volunteer women firefighters. And so every session, there was usually 6 or 8 women firefighters mm-hmm. there as well to help with the training. Mm-hmm. We ran a lot of the stations. And then when we ran, then Anna Schermelhorn, who's a firefighter in Ladder 9, one of the younger women, she has about 8 or 9 years on the job now, also from Minnesota, I might add. Anna organized this whole training program out at the Fire Academy that was run 3 times a week. And to run the program properly, we had to have a minimum of 8 volunteers staffing the course, which we had for every single session. We were the only, all the other fraternal organizations ran similar programs. They were allowed to also run programs. And the guy from the fire department who oversaw the course said that the women firefighters had the best program by far. And we had this enormous level of commitment, both retired women firefighters and also active duty. To show up at these mm-hmm. sessions. And then the kids also, a lot of them came, you know, went from the 8 weeks at the sports club to the 8 weeks at the training academy.
So let's talk about recruitment for the fire department, because this seems a good place to talk about it.
Sucks
still. I know you were working, the last time we were working together mm-hmm. on advocacy, you were trying to do a lot with that. So Douglas White supposed to be in charge of that.
Well, they hired a firm to help them with recruitment, and it was a firm that had done work in the African American community but knew nothing about the women's community. And they came up with this slogan, Heroes Wanted, which we felt was really not a good outreach to historically excluded groups after 9/11, where all these people who had no contact with the fire service, the whole image of the fire department in their minds is of firefighters being killed by buildings falling down on top mm-hmm. of them. So, you know, we really felt that was counterproductive in terms of mm-hmm. recruiting people
Those
of color.
Those ads were everywhere.
Everywhere.
Yeah.
Heroes Wanted. Mm-hmm. And, you know what, we got people applying from Japan and California and Australia.
What about from Harlem? And
And yet they were not able to significantly increase the number of people of color and women applying. And you know what, the numbers, even if you say, all right, we had, you know, 2,000 African-American men take the written test, and then we had, 2,000 Hispanic men take it, and we had 400 women take it, you know, which is basically the same number that we've had since I took it in 1977.
I thought 500 women took it.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, they haven't increased that number significantly since 1977. The only thing is that the numbers of people actually taking it has dropped somewhat, mm-hmm. so they've increased the percentage. But that's not the important number. Mm-hmm. The important number is who's in the top 50% of the list? Mm-hmm. Who's in the top 4,000 names mm-hmm. on the list? And a lot of these people don't show up for the physical abilities exam. And then if they do, they either didn't score high enough on the written or high enough on the physical abilities exam to actually be in a position to be hired. And then, beyond that, the question is, how much does the department do to actively keep in contact with these people so that they don't lose interest, they don't move and lose their, it's very labor intensive. Yeah. Anna Skimmerhorn is in constant contact with every woman on that list who has given any indication that she has a continuing interest.
Now, I know you had discussions with them. What is the problem? They're not responsive to people who've been thinking about this for a very long time and have important things to say about what might work. Why?
They always think
that
they know best, and they always reinvent the wheel. They put new people in charge every time. There's the person who they put in charge this latest time. I mean, who was really in charge? Not Doug White, but somebody else. Had no experience with recruiting people to the fire service or any uniform service for that matter. Frankly, there wasn't that much direction given to her because the people who had done it the previous time sort of left and didn't pass along any of the...
There's no debriefing, nothing.
There's no historical memory, none whatsoever. And it's not unique to recruitment. It's pretty much that way with the entire fire department. The minute somebody retires and leaves a project, it's like, okay, where's the papers? What did this person actually do? What point in the process are we at? It's like nothing was ever done. It is amazing sometimes how we manage to put fires out, but we do. What's really discouraging to me is that I look at other departments
that are doing better,
who started out in exactly the same place that New York did, both in terms of small numbers, hostility towards women and people of color.
In San Francisco, they had a court order
for
25 years.
Right, and which I think they recently ended,
they
unfortunately.
Did.
But they ended up with over 200 women. Now they got a woman chief of department. Not that that necessarily guarantees any particular advantage to women, but hopefully this woman at least has some recognition of some of the issues. In the UK, I just got back from the United Kingdom. When I visited the London Fire Brigade in the early 80s, when I first came on the job, they had exactly the same issues. I mean, active harassment and physical abuse of women firefighters, a real derogatory attitude towards women and people of color. Boy, that culture has been forced to turn around. And I see friends of mine who started out after me in the fire service, now they're chief of department. They're the head of their organizations, or they're very high ranking. They have a real voice in their organizations, and in our department, it's still the case that that doesn't exist for women.
I went on the internet and looked at the Brits, and it was pretty interesting and amazing how much work they've done.
It is really amazing.
What are some of the things they've done that
are quality stuff?
Do you want to talk about that?
Well, they have, they recognize it's a cultural change that has to occur. And, they had the same issues about, they called it bullying. It's just hazing. This is what we do with all the new recruits, blah, blah, blah. And they've dramatically changed their training methodology. They have set goals and timetables. They do specific outreach in the communities. They have a different hiring process than just answer 100 question multiple choice test that actively seeks to reach certain groups. And now they have some really radical, I mean radical for the Forest Service, initiatives about bringing people in from the outside who have no fire service background to assume certain kinds of administrative roles. Not so sure how that's going to get integrated into everything, but they're moving along, and they've done a lot more research. I think that they have, they have a political imperative to do this, and there is no political imperative in New York City. I don't know what the hell the council's doing. The council yelled and yelled about the whole recruitment process. Mm-hmm.
I know, like a year or a year and a half ago, they had hearings.
But they have no teeth. They never, punish the fire department in any way. No one's held accountable for any of this stuff. The woman, the people who were in charge of this abysmal recruitment effort.
Okay, so we're...
Basically, citizens are... They're not... They don't seem to care about the fact that the fire department doesn't reflect the face of their communities. Mm-hmm. And that, the same numbers of people die in fires every year that always have. The department's always touting the fact that fire deaths are dropping, but mm-hmm. not as you would expect. There's lots of things that we could be doing to make our communities safer, and it's just not happening because mm-hmm. people aren't—they're not focused on that. And so,
one thing, I was at a award ceremony at the fire department recently, and they talked about more training for the officers, new training program.
Well, they damn well better have some more training because nobody has any experience. Mm-hmm. I mean, they've created a situation where the entire fire department is under-experienced. They allowed all these senior people to retire mm-hmm. with their pension crap, mm-hmm. and they've hired all these new people.
That's a referral to the large exodus after 9/11 in order
really
to take
a dangerous, scary situation.
Advantage of the fact that you get to take the top... get to figure out your best quarters or for the pension.
Yeah, but
I was reading that in the
they've
chief.
Just given a whole series of promotional exams mm-hmm. where you could be a firefighter in 9/11 and now you're on the battalion chief's list. Mm-hmm. And then these guys have no fire experience to begin with because they came in during a very low level of fire duty. And so, they would have had to have been on a while to get some experience. But also, they have no command experience. They haven't really been in charge of companies. I looked at the battalion chief's list. There were some guys recently promoted who hadn't even been assigned to a company. They're still bouncing in the division. So they never had a company to learn about all the little ins and outs of personnel management. And the department knew this was going on, and you get this guy Cassano, who's chief of operations, yeah. being quoted in the paper saying, we got the cream of the crop now.
Yeah.
Well, you got people that can memorize, mm-hmm. but I don't know how they're going to be at a fire scene.
Highly motivated? That was another way he described it.
Highly motivated? Mm-hmm. No, they took three exams right in a row. Mm-hmm. And the rest of us, the senior captains hadn't taken an exam in over 6 years. That was when we took the captain's exam. So these guys took had three exams, mm-hmm. lieutenant, captain, and now mm-hmm. battalion chief, in the time since we had taken our captain's mm-hmm. exam.
Right.
And now
well,
we're competing against them.
No doubt about it. The FDNY is screwed up. But I want to segue more towards gender issues. And one thing I want to ask you about is just today there was an article about the guy from Staten Island who got smashed in the head with a chair on New Year's Eve.
Right.
He's filing a big lawsuit. What about the culture in the firehouses and in terms of women and, the kind of the nature of of that? I mean, I'm sure it varies.
The culture is very hostile. Yeah. Culture is very hostile to women. It's very hostile to difference. And, you know, my argument is that if you promote diversity within your organization, you benefit not only the people, the so-called minorities in the organization, but you also benefit all those white men who really didn't want to go along with this program. Mm-hmm. You know, they really weren't all that thrilled about shaving their heads in Proby school and looking like a bunch of skinheads, you know. They might have some differing ideas about how the organization should be run. But basically, everybody is shut down in the kitchen. You know, so in the UK they call it the watch culture because that's what their crew, you know, that works together all the time is called. And, you know, in us it's the firehouse kitchen. It's the idea that the guy with the biggest mouth, who's the most obnoxious, is the one who sets the tone for the firehouse.
Rush Limbaugh of the firehouse.
Yeah, and that, you know, everybody else has to toe the line or they're going to be made fun of or driven out of the firehouse or, you know. And so they just learn to shut up.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result, all kinds of, you know, important, I think, important information, contributions from these people, they just kind of regard the job as a place to go and hang out. You know, I'll just go and hang out with my friends. And not that this is a workplace where we genuinely value people's ideas, and we want you to think of it as work, not like as where you're going to go and hang out with the guy who just did your roof, mm-hmm. something like that. That's all well and good. I mean, you know, helping each other off duty and being there for each other in times of crises, that's fine. But the idea that you have to go along with everything that guy says because, you know, he did your roof or because otherwise it's going to make fun of you that's crap.
I recall reading these stories about the Staten Island incident, and some of the stuff that was aimed at him was to sort of like along the lines of homophobia or, you know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, who knows?
Who knows?
I mean, who knows? Because that kind of language is so common that, mm-hmm. and it has nothing to do with, you know, the department finally asked me to teach EEO. Mm-hmm. And one of the scenarios that they have is a guy who admitted in the kitchen that he liked to watch Six Feet Under, and they started calling him a fag.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, you know, this kind of stuff, it would be funny if it weren't so really demeaning and demoralizing to people. It is unrelenting.
Mm-hmm.
And they will just beat a person down. And frankly, most people can't stand up to it. They just... They don't want to be bothered. You know, it's not that important to them. They don't see the job as that important.
Mm-hmm.
And the kind of stuff that goes on, the things I've been reading that have come out of the UK, you know, what they recognize is that if you bully somebody in training, they will then adopt a survival thing where either they pretend to go along with the program, but they really don't, or they'll actively fight the program all the time, you know, or they'll just withdraw,
mm-hmm.
let's say. I guess the other option is they don't think for themselves. They go along with the program so much, they just go along with the program and they never think mm-hmm. for themselves that there might be a better way. None of that stuff is good for the organization. You know, it causes a bunch of, it creates a bunch of office, you know, boss haters, boss fighters. It makes people into, you know, blind followers. It's goofy. And yet this is the culture that is really pushed by the fire department. And, you know, they're always touting it about how so-and-so was so-and-so's son, and, you know, and this guy was my buddy, and you know, it's just this high school locker room type of thing. Nasty. Yeah.
Tell me about Well, there's a few questions I'd like to ask you to reflect back on, just in terms of when you first came in. One question I'm interested in is, if you could think a bit about comparing the support from the women's movement, women's organizations, back when you first were trying to become firefighter, and the current contemporary period.
Well, we had a lot more need then.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we really had terrible things going on that, and no clout whatsoever in the department. I mean, not that we have any clout now, mm-hmm. but, you know, we were very junior and inexperienced, and we didn't know what the game was, yeah. you know. And I'm not saying that there aren't individual situations where women are still having a difficult time. They are. But, you know, now at least they have some senior women within the fire department to give them some advice and be advocates on their behalf. That didn't exist for us in the beginning, and we really needed organizations like Now New York City, and, you know, at one point there was this street action group called WAC.
Oh, right.
And they did some great stuff for me when I was, you know, trying to get the doctor who had assaulted
me. Was it WAC or WHAM?
This was WAC.
Okay.
They were very short-lived.
Mm-hmm.
But they were great for me. They did some street theater. It was really, they got a lot of publicity. And, you know, we tried very hard at that point to form some alliances with the women police officers and the very beginning of the women's sanitation. Women correction officers were, their then president was very good and a very capable person. And, you know, the city council, there were some women city council members who facilitated that, you know, Pam Elam's boss, Miriam Friedlander at the time. And so that stuff was critical to us then. I would say now that, you know, there's women's groups since then, like the New York Women's Foundation that funded one of our training programs, not this recent one, but mm-hmm. the one before that. You know, there's been other groups that have stepped up for us over the years, but I don't think they're as vocal mm-hmm. about their support now as they were in the earlier. You know, the stuff's just not as egregious yeah. as it was then. Mm-hmm.
But also seems that consciousness has faded.
I think a lot of people really believe that the situation resolved itself. They're not mm-hmm. aware. Every time I give a speech or anyone talks about what the actual numbers are, you hear a gasp.
Mm-hmm.
Like, when I gave a speech right after 9/11 down at the
National Law Center?
Yeah, the National mm-hmm. Women's Law Center.
Mm-hmm.
And it was before all these, you know, muckamucks. 5,000 people in a Washington ballroom. And you could hear an audible gasp, a loud gasp from people when I told them how many women there were in the New York City Fire Department. They don't believe that. They think that by now we've got to have 1,000 women in the New York City Fire Department. And, you know, nobody's telling them anything different. So I think a lot of women's organizations just think, okay.
It sort of disappeared, you know, as an issue.
Yeah, because maybe they've heard about the, you know, the woman fire chief in San Francisco mm-hmm. and the fact that they have over 200 women there now.
Police chief in Atlanta.
Police chief, you know, I think both, there's one place that has both, well, San Francisco has both a woman police chief and a woman fire mm-hmm. chief. So, you know, I think they think, New York's mm-hmm. fixed it. In fact, they haven't fixed it. So,
we're living in a period of real political repression, regression.
Scary period.
Scary What are your thoughts on the situation for equality, affirmative action, any of that in this?
Move to Canada? I don't know, you know, at this point, I mean, it's just fight like hell and you know, make sure that the next 4 years after this, that there's a change. Clearly people have misread a lot of the political temperament that's out there in the hinterlands. And I really wonder whether we're turning into, you know, two nations here. Really not all that different from, you know, the North and the South in the Civil War. I mean, there really do seem to be two political cultures. There's like the Northeast culture and California, and then there's like the rest of the country. And that's frightening to me because, you know, I wonder, what are these women that voted for the Republicans thinking? Do they really think that a group of people that tried to eliminate Title IX, eliminate the Women's Bureau in the Department of Labor,
took all the pay equity stuff off
took
the website?
All the pay, no, no, eliminated any pay equity initiatives. Mm-hmm. Absolutely eliminated them. Are willing to send women to Iraq to be killed, but aren't willing to give them their full rights in the United States. Are perfectly happy to have women making, you know, what is it now, 79%, 79 cents to the dollar. Mm-hmm. It's actually dropped, I think, from what it was maybe a year or two ago, our earning capability as compared to men. You know, to go along like that and still have, you know, really poor job opportunities for women in good paying jobs like the trades and firefighting. I really, you know, I think that a lot of women maybe mistook confidence for competency, particularly in a wartime president. Mm-hmm. And yes, he exudes confidence, mistaken confidence, misplaced confidence. But it's confidence, and it certainly, in my opinion, has nothing to do with confidence. There you have it. We got it for 4 more years.
Yep. Talked about the one of our interviews, I asked you about the future, and you said one of the big areas that would make a difference would be Title IX and sports, girls in sports. And I hadn't actually been paying attention to that. But now as a girl reporter for public press, I actually have... woke up and, you know, I had just paid no attention for over 20 years, and it's astounding, the difference in women in sports. I mean, it's just amazing. But
there's some downsides, too.
Okay.
I mean,
and the other
there's a large number of, you know, educational districts that simply can't afford after-school programs anymore, New York City being one of them. And so a lot of the opportunities for after-school sports have disappeared off the map entirely. Because of budget concerns. So there's no sports for boys, there's no sports for girls. And, you know, we never have gotten away from the elitist, you know, NCAA attitude towards sports. Women are now as invested in that as the men. But that being said, I mean, it just thrills me to hear my male coworkers, firefighters, talking about how they want their daughters to get a lacrosse scholarship or a tennis scholarship or some kind of scholarship, and they're planning on this. You know,
soccer,
right? they are driving these girls to these after-school sports or these private club sports activities because they see it as a ticket to a good education. I'm not so sure that it has directly benefited the applicant pool for the New York City Fire Department, but I'm sure it has in other places, mm-hmm. Title IX being a root cause of things. I read about people who are just slightly younger than myself who had the benefit of Title IX, and they're always like former something sport, person, and played at a competitive level at such and such college, mm-hmm. or something, and we never had any of that, so.
Right.
Can't hurt.
When you look at the other uniformed services in New York, like the police department, sanitation, corrections, there was just a profile of a woman from the Port Authority Police Department who promoted to captain in the Times today.
Not read the Times.
Have you, do you have any contact with these women in?
Well, after 9/11, we had contact with some individual women.
Mm-hmm.
It's very limited. They're really on different career tracks than mm-hmm. we're on. And they have, different powers that be that they have to mm-hmm. deal with and stuff. It's too bad. I mean, I really wish that there was a lot more contact between the organizations, but it seems like, I tried, it's more than a year ago now, it's probably a year and a half or 2 years ago, to see if we could get a coalition of women within the fire department to work together. That would be women EMS, mm-hmm. women dispatchers.
Yeah.
Now, the numbers in all these segments of the fire department are very small, especially like women dispatchers, tiny group. EMS is, of course, there's more women in EMS than there are mm-hmm. on the firefighting side of things, but I could not get the women EMS workers, and I was going to have to try and sell this to the women firefighters, who at that point there was a lot more of the senior women still around, and they were initially adamantly against having anything to do with the women EMS workers. Now we have quite a few women firefighters who used to be on the EMS side, so I don't think that prejudice exists as much anymore. It's a difficult issue because, of course, everybody assumes when I say Captain Berkman calling from the fire department that I'm on the EMS side.
Yeah.
And a lot of women don't like that. I mean, after all, we fought all these years to be recognized as firefighters, and it's always assumed we're EMS.
Say Captain Berkman firefighter.
Yeah, well, that ain't happening. I say Captain Berkman of Engine 239.
Okay, researching the EMS on gender issues,
yeah.
I see that there's a big problem with the women not having the course for paramedic is offered, and they don't have to pay for it, but they, because they're mothers and they have a family and they work long hours, they don't have the time. So it turns out that mostly the males are taking advantage.
Yeah, that doesn't shock me.
Yeah.
Despite the fact that they have women at fairly high levels in EMS, those are appointed positions, so you're mm-hmm. always beholden to your whoever put you there,
mm-hmm.
and I don't know, there's some women's consciousness in EMS. I just haven't had time to follow through on that. I mean, after I had this meeting at my house where the EMS women basically said we can't possibly join with any other women because we can't even get a women's organization going within EMS. Mm-hmm. And, that was sad.
Hard times.
Mm.
Okay, so you've been on the job for 22 years. Mm-hmm. Are you going away?
No, I'm just blowing okay. this candle out before it's fire.
Yeah, no fires, please.
Yeah, smells good though.
So 22 years, and there's still out there, there's this, you know, differing reactions to you, like some iconic status versus others, you know, who are like, she had an agenda and resentment.
God, I hope I had an agenda. I mean, you know, how pathetic is it to go through life without
an agenda? Good point,
you know,
Mr. Berkman.
It is nuts. Okay, I'm just sort of, you know, what I see in people is, like, totally focused on their family, their immediate family, and, you know, they drive the kids to soccer games, and they take the kids to Disneyland, and, you know, they worry about their house and their second car and their second job and they listen to that. And, you know, maybe there's a little bit involved in their church or maybe a little bit involved on in their block or something like that. But they don't have any, like, knowledge of or interest in the larger world around them. You know, the kids don't. Everything is what you get fed through television and popular
radio,
culture.
Driving to work, Rush Limbaugh.
Yeah, I mean, it's just crap.
Yeah.
And it's really brain deadening. And it's all about owning things and shopping and, you know,
consumption
this and that.
Is the national religion.
Yeah, so, and there's no questioning of that. There's no questioning of why things are the way that they are, mm-hmm. how we can have so much poverty in our own country, how we can be fighting in Iraq, but people are killing each other like crazy in Africa, and our government doesn't do anything about that.
No oil.
Yeah, well, you know, so maybe if it was Nigeria, it'd be a little different or something. But, and so I think, you know, I'm not ashamed of the fact that I'm interested in issues that are larger than my own individual concerns. And if that's an agenda, then yeah, I have an agenda. And my agenda is, I don't want any more little girls growing up and having somebody say to them that you can't do that because you're a little girl, not because you're not smart enough or not strong enough or, you know, you don't have the training to do it, but just the fact that, you know, you're a girl, you can't do that. And that, I think, is idiotic. And so I'm not going to see that changed in my lifetime, but certainly I think things are a little bit better than they were in the 1950s. Hopefully we'll never go back to the 1950s. Mm-hmm. That's my agenda.
Okay, so now you're still on the job. You could retire, but you're still on the job. What keeps you going?
Right now, I'm not so sure. I've been thinking a lot about retirement lately. A lot. Well, I mean, you know, I'm not an old person, so if I'm going to retire, I better have some idea of something I want to do. And firefighting really spoils you for a lot of different, for other types of work because, you know, I just took 10 days off and went to the UK. Mm-hmm. And didn't use a day of vacation
wow.
time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I have 2 more weeks of vacation coming up in a week. it just goes
well,
on and on. And I make a pretty damn good salary.
Now, let me ask you
so
a leading question. What about the battalion captain?
Chief?
Chief? Battalion chief?
Nah.
I have a block, battalion
I'm
chief.
Not.
Are you going to take that test?
I took it.
You took
I'm
it?
Not on the list.
Oh.
Yeah.
How did that happen?
I didn't pass the test.
Oh, okay.
It's
very hard?
Well, the last time the passing mark was 57.
Uh-huh.
This time it was 81.
Mm.
That's those boys that studied the 3
mm-hmm.
tests.
Mm-hmm.
So there were a lot of senior captains that missed by by several points, and I was
so
one
the
of
fact
them.
That you're experienced, been in the department a long time, have a
had no impact
in history,
unless you
have
unless
a,
you had
term.
The passing mark to begin with.
Okay.
And it was 100 point,
right.
Multiple choice, pen and pencil. I mean, pencil and paper, memorized.
Okay.
Nothing on resume, nothing on experience, nothing on projects you've worked on for the department or assignments you've held, nothing on education other than, you know, minimal requirements you had to have in order to be promoted. So I forget what it is, like, I don't know, it might be up to 2 years of college at this point. And no oral component or interactive component, nothing like running a fire scenario or talking, you know, to a panel. I've actually sat on evaluation panels for promotion for lieutenants in other departments, and, you know, they have an oral exam. They sit before a panel of outside evaluators, and you ask them questions, and then you rate them on how they answer them. My department does none of that. So, this, you know, you could be, I think you could be functionally illiterate and get promoted.
So, you've mentioned some of the great things about being a firefighter, but just in the more non-monetary vacation realm, what are some of the satisfactions of your career that you...
Well, it's been a little hard lately because, you know, I think that there's... We had, after that incident in Staten Island, the powers that be decided that the way to manage the fire department now is to really bring down the iron fist and return us to the good old days of strict disciplinary grooming, you know, routine. That's
okay,
right. Pam was always having me do Maureen has me do stuff, open jars. You know, I'm really very capable of doing like that stuff.
Good. It's good somebody.
Yeah.
So now that we've got the tape in the tape recorder, I want you to continue telling me on tape two about what you were talking about.
All right. Well, since January, the department's decided that January 2004, and they had the incident in Staten Island, and then they had all these other things where the cops were arresting us like crazy for drunk driving and that kind of crap. You know, it is the case that discipline got completely out of control after 9/11, where and there were lots of reasons for that. Some of which the department fostered and, you know, human nature being what it is, you know, people took full advantage of. And then, you know, then they wanted to put on the brakes, they wanted to pull in the reins, and the speeding train, to mix analogies like crazy, was not going to be stopped. So they wanted to put on the brakes, stop the speeding train. And their way of doing it was to, like, you know, everything by the book. Okay. That was fine, except for the fact that we're in the midst of, like, a period of tremendous demoralization because we have no contract. And, you know, the mayor is saying that, that we're not going to get any raises. And, you know...
Aren't they talking about putting four firefighters?
Well,
instead
that,
of,
that's,
you know,
happened.
That's
already gone.
So,
that's,
and then there
gone.
Was the shutdown of the firehouses.
There's,
I knew
six,
you were
closing six,
you were
firehouses.
With that.
That was tremendously demoralizing. I mean, I was the captain of one of those houses briefly, and even though I was there for only a very short time, you know, it just made me suicidal. I mean, it was very, very difficult. And what it made it most difficult for me was not the idea that a firehouse was closing, but that I believed firmly that there was no basis for closing that firehouse, and that the statistics, the economics of it, all of that was in the opposite direction. That place should never, that particular
place. What
house
was that?
That was Engine 204. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm not going to go into all the things
right.
that led me to believe that, but the crap that I heard out of the highest levels of management in my organization was just, it was embarrassing. And yet the firehouses are closed, and they remain closed. And they don't care, you know, if firefighters die, if civilians die. You know, their attitude is, well, you know, you're driving a 10-year-old car. If you were that interested in safety, you'd have, you know, a brand new car with all the latest safety devices and everything. And it's the same way with the fire department. Can't have perfect safety, so we're going to just make do with this 10-year-old car that we've got. Which, you know, okay, then don't lie to people. Tell them. And so instead of trying to actually tell people what they've done here, which is increase the amount of response time for us to be able to get to their house, that they've made it so that it's going to take a lot longer for companies to be actively able to come in and rescue somebody because they've cut the number of firefighters and they've reduced the number of companies. That they have all these companies out of service at any given time. So in fact, while you think you have a firehouse protecting your neighborhood, it's not there for that time, that particular time. All these kinds of things, they're not telling the public the truth because they feel that the public would be outraged. Just the same way that they decided they weren't going to close any firehouse that had lost a member in 9/11 because they knew that the families of those firehouses would raise a holy stink about it. So they picked only houses that where nobody was actually killed. You know, this is calculated, and this is really hard to take.
Mm-hmm. So you say it's a period of demoralization, but looking back on your career, I mean, even though you're not yet out the door, but what are some highlights?
Well, the fact that we had all these women that stayed for 20 years. Surprise! And that's, you know, some of us got promoted.
Right.
That we have some good young women coming up behind us. Hopefully they'll, you know, continue the struggle. I was very encouraged by the women who you know, volunteered and organized and worked so hard on the training program for the new group of women. Hopefully they'll pay that back, the new ones that are coming up. You know, it's just going to be a very long, drawn-out process by reason of the lack of numbers. And so that is a little discouraging, but, you know, hopefully these kids will really study very hard and... you know, it may be that there'll have to be some initiatives from outside of the fire department that really force the fire department to change its culture the way that they've done in the UK and in other places in the US. I don't think this culture is going to change itself voluntarily the way that it's going now. People don't see the advantage to having a different kind of firefighter and different kind of firefighting mentality. After 9/11, you know, there was this huge emphasis on the manly man.
The brotherhood.
The brotherhood and the heroism and this and that. And all those things have existed.
It was sort of like it regressed.
Yeah, all those things have always existed and always continue to exist, but that's not all that the fire service is about.
Mm-hmm.
And getting killed. You know, we should be smarter than that. And we should recognize that there's a whole lot of things that we can do to prevent that from happening.
Yeah, I don't think the command center or the World Trade Center helped a lot, and Giuliani didn't really seem to take any heat for that.
Oh, absolutely none. Oh, he's a big hero.
A big
hero.
Is
George Bush. Yeah. You know, these are guys who, all this stuff happened when they were in charge, so to speak, and yet when they rushed to the site, you know, afterwards and put their arms around people and talked about how tough they were going to be on terrorism. Well, how tough were you on terrorism before 9/11? You know, I mean, Giuliani was basically on his way out the door as a totally disgraced mayor when 9/11 happened. And just to project an image of strength without really making the city a better place, I don't think. To tell people that the way to deal with tragedy is to go out and shop, that is pathetic. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it really makes you question not only the government that you have in power right now, but also people's common sense that, you know, that voted for these guys and continue to vote for these guys. The idea that people would think about Giuliani for mayor, for president.
Yeah.
You know, he couldn't have gotten elected dog catcher before 9/11. So.
Well, on that happy note, is there anything else you want to add?
Well, give me those questions, because I thought.
Okay.
You know, it's a little hard for me to be upbeat after the election we've just had and after some of the things that have been going on in the fire department recently. But, you know, that doesn't take anything away from all the things that we've been able to accomplish over the last 20 years. And even if we step back from some of that, you know, we did do these things. You know, women went to fires and they put them out. Women supported other women in their struggle. Women helped other women get on this job. And, you know, Rocky and I are going to run, and Ella are going to run like a little training session for women on how to study for promotional exams. I mean, we haven't stopped doing that stuff. Eileen and I are both going to be involved in doing EEO training. Other people are involved in being EEO counselors and being part of diversity training. Other women, that is. So, you know, all these things, it's just going to be a long and involved process. And unfortunately, you know, we haven't been able to accomplish maybe as much as we would have liked, or as much as other places have accomplished. There could be, you know, but given what I've seen in other places, you never know. There could be like a dramatic turnaround all of a sudden, and, you know, something could happen and things could really change for the better. So, you know, you can always hope.
And Anna Schimmerhorn is real active with United Women Firefighters now, is she?
Yeah, and she's probably going to be the next president.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, that's a big positive.
Mm-hmm.
In my opinion, because she's got a highly developed political consciousness, and she's, you know, shown her capability by being able to organize this training program, and she certainly established some very good relationships with the younger women, so, you know, she can get their support and their cooperation, you know, the organization can maybe revive itself and you know, with new energy. And,
mm-hmm.
Because clearly there's a lot of stuff that can be done, that has to be done, you know. Things are far from over in terms of women being integrated. So.
What about the national organization for women? Is that still running?
Well, it's gonna be in a period of transition also, because you know, one of the lead founders of it, Terry Florin, who's been the executive director since we hired an executive director, is planning her transition for the next couple of years, and so
Meaning her retirement.
Her retirement from this organization. So, that's gonna take some work, and I have great hopes that the organization is gonna pull through, and be able to be stronger as a result of this. You know, but it's always an iffy situation when you have any group that's been so thoroughly dominated by one personality for so many years.
Are you still active with them?
I'm active in the sense that, I go to their conferences, I do workshops. I haven't sat on the board for many years. I still am very involved with them in terms of issues revolving around physical abilities testing, and Terry sends me inquiries, and Anna and I just wrote an article actually about the training program in New York for the national group, and, you know, so I'm still involved in that sense. Mm-hmm.
I know you did a lot of work about this, around this, it's sort of like, a generic test, a different test than New York has?
Well, it's similar to New York.
Could you explain that?
Yeah, it's called the Canada Physical Ability Test, and it's actually pushed by the Firefighters Union and the International Association of Fire Chiefs, the IFF and the IFC. Mm-hmm. And, there's some upsides and some downsides in terms of, hiring more women through the use of this test. It is probably easier for women to pass than the New York City test, but a lot of women candidates don't have access to any kind of preparation programs for it. It's a very trainable test. Mm-hmm. And there hasn't been a lot of work done by the organizations that are promoting this test to improve the recruitment and training segments of the program. So, we're constantly talking to them about that. It's better than some tests that were given previously. It's probably harder than some tests that were given previously. It has some sort of shaky science behind it, but, it's what we've got right now, so it's what we're working with. Yeah. And it's better than a lot of stuff that they could have come up with, actually.
Okay, well, thank you very much for...
Think you want to do dinner?
Yeah.